From courtside of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast, episode number 377. Andrew with you once again. I am Andrew in our forum and Andrew NLSC on the Twitter. My co-host and fellow NLSC team member is Derek. You know him in our forum as Deeper3, and he is Deeper384 on the Twitter.
No, I'm happy to be here. However, you know, before recording this just a few minutes ago, we got the announcement that, you know, super sad news that Mark Eaton passed away.
Out of the blue, yeah.
I guess he went for a bike ride. This is what the articles are saying, is he went for a bike ride around 8 p.m. And he never returned. So obviously we don't have a lot of the details and whatnot, but one of the greatest defenders to ever play in the NBA.
Oh, without question. I mean, a lot of people might say, oh, he's 7'4", of course, he can block shots, but there's been a lot of tall players over the years that just racked up fouls. I mean, he had great coordination, great defensive instincts, a fine player, a superb defender, and only 64. A very sad news indeed.
Yeah, and I mean, great rebounder as well. He had almost 1,000 in one season, and he also, you know, it's not just height that gets you almost 500 blocks in a single season.
No.
He had over 450. His timing was impeccable, and he was just such a force. He was a wide body as well for that height. And from all accounts, from everything that I've read, he was a great guy. Like, he was involved in a lot of different things in the community. He has a site, you know, he had a site called www.7foot4.com, and he was helping businesses and companies, and he was like a motivational speaker and whatnot. Great guy on the court, great player, and then great guy off the court. So super sad, like you said, young as well, but he was such a big part of so many great Jazz teams, and he had that amazing series in 1988 against the Lakers as well, and without him they wouldn't even have had a chance, you know what I mean, in that series. So yeah, just super sad.
Too young,
a great NBA career, and like, we have a lot of great highlights we can look back on from him and whatnot, and we use him in basketball video games as well fairly often, especially in my apartment, at my place, because, you know, we have our classic rosters that we're using and stuff. And I put the 90-91 Jazz in NBA 2K17, etc. So, yeah, just a sad day.
You know, you mentioned the highlights that he produced. Obviously, the standing block against Rex Chapman is one that immediately comes to mind.
And that got me blocked by Rex Chapman.
Ironically, yeah.
I remember I told you about that on a past episode. I was joking around and I said block or charge, because that's his thing on Twitter. And I said block or charge, and I showed the highlight of him getting his shot, his layup, trapped on the glass by a standing Mark Eaton. And immediately after, he blocked me. So, sorry about that. But I thought it was a funny joke, but clearly at the time he didn't take it that way.
I mean, I thought it was a funny joke, but maybe you caught Rex on a bad day, because he's usually pretty jovial about that stuff. But just a tremendous highlight. And as you said, a great guy. If you go and listen to Adam Ryan, has a great podcast, In All Airness, where he covers the history of the NBA, especially the eras that we grew up in and have so much nostalgia for. He actually got to speak to Mark Eaton, episode 49, I believe. I tweeted out a link to that. Definitely go back and listen to that, because it was such a great interview. And Adam's a great interviewer as well. But Mark was such a great personality. And as you said, just comes across as a great guy and has some great stories about that era as well. So rest in peace.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing too is, like I said, he's a motivational speaker. So he's obviously, he's great to listen to, and he can like pump you up. But part of his story obviously is that, you know, as a 21-year-old, I believe he was just an auto mechanic, and he was discovered, and they were like, hey, listen, you're a big guy. You have great size, great length. You know, we want to see what kind of basketball player you can be. And then he turns into a great NBA player. And that's a great story from somebody who had not played before, from all accounts, to somebody who becomes such an integral part of, you know, professional hoops. Yeah. And then, you know, another thing too, I wanted to bring up as well about, we posted the second week of the return of the NLSE top 10. And I'm a little disappointed with just like the interaction and the lack of submissions. And I think you can agree, you know, I want to say that we don't see as much activity in the video sections of the NLSE anymore, as far as like people uploading highlights, you know, uploading to YouTube or just posting a random highlight here or there. Basically people like dive straight into like the modding sections, and then any highlights that are actually posted, and we're going to get into this a little bit more later, but any highlights that are actually posted to people's YouTubes, it's mostly like builds and park highlights.
It really is. Yeah.
And yeah. So I just wanted to say that I had to pad the top 10 a little bit this week, and that was because of lack of submissions. So a little disappointed in that as well.
Yeah. We want to encourage people to get involved with that. And I created some topics as well in the forum. So definitely get involved with those discussions. And it's one of the reasons why I haven't really been doing the wish list this year either, is because we haven't had those conversations as much. And I really think we do need to have those conversations, but maybe as we'll get into later on the show, as you alluded to, maybe it is because there is that lack of enthusiasm for the current NBA that people aren't really playing those modes. So the discussion around basketball gaming has really changed in that respect.
Yeah, I would love you to put the 2K21 wish list in there, though. I mean, excuse me, 2K22 wish list thread in there, because I'm definitely going to be utilizing it. And I think that the Live King has utilized it in the past. And we, you know, when we had our conversation with Leftos, he mentioned how important those wish lists are. So hopefully we can get that on there, and I can basically put out my detailed wish list, and other people can, and we can submit those ideas.
Good point. I'll create that over the weekend. Yeah. But by the time this comes out, it might already be up there. If not, it'll be out the day after. But I'll get on that as well.
Yeah, it would be great. And then, you know, the other aspect of it is like you had stated, and this kind of goes along with our main discussion today, is the attitude around the NBA isn't the same as it used to be. The excitement around the players and the plays that they make, and, you know, the personnel is different. The way the league is run is different. The way they're recruiting players that come into the league is different. The game style is different, as it's turned into mostly a three-point fest as well. I think that all of that adds into the fact that, you know, people are not playing the NBA modes as much, and they're not as excited about playing those NBA modes and using NBA players anymore. You know, we used to, and I made a tweet about this on Twitter, you know, people used to like be super excited to watch, you know, Derrick Rose play and explode to the rim and do all these different things on the court and blow by his man. And they used to love to watch, you know, prime Dwayne Young and prime Dwayne Wade spin into a dunk, or like posterize somebody, or just make somebody look completely foolish on the perimeter. And the same thing with Vince Carter flying to the hoop, or Tracy McGrady going nuts. And, you know, Shaq just absolutely bodying people at the rim. So if we want to go back a little bit further, and, you know, Steve Nash, you know, putting together some sizzle into an alley-oop to Amari Stoudemire, like, I can go on and on with the names and the characters and the highlights and the abilities that people used to get super excited about, right?
Sure.
And you don't see that as much anymore.
You see one person hyped up, basically, by the media. By the basketball media. So anybody else kind of doesn't really get credit, doesn't really get the highlights. Even when that team loses, it's somehow about him. So, yeah.
The NBA isn't as exciting, though.
The coverage has changed. The game has changed. The coverage has changed. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. The game has changed, and the coverage has changed. And so what's happening is also, as we've talked about, NBA 2K, and I'll give you the floor in a second on this, because, you know, I talked to you a little bit about this before the show. You know, I'm very passionate about this right now, and about, you know, the state of basketball today in general, about my feelings about it. But what ends up happening too is NBA 2K, the way they market their game is they are pushing people constantly to what build are you going to use? You know, basically making your own player and throwing him in the park, and based, and they're not promoting the NBA modes, the NBA content as much either, and they're not showcasing that stuff. You know, I made a thread a while back when I was calling out some roster issues and rush jobs and copy and paste, where I showed a bunch of screenshots of the most recent NBA 2K main handle Twitter, their tweets, and it was all about your fit. Are you going to cop this outfit? This outfit is lit, all of this stuff. And it's like skateboards and backpacks and blah, blah, blah. It's not showcasing the NBA players. It's not showcasing highlights that are being done in the game. It's not showcasing my league or my NBA, excuse me, or modes like that. It's talking about your fit, and it's talking about your build. And even questions that Mike Wang asks on Twitter, as you've seen, they are related often to that build, that, you know, the online gaming.
Sure.
There will be occasional question about the shot meter, stuff like that. So to end this ramble and kind of give you the floor as well on this main topic, all of that factors in with the fact that we're seeing less highlights, we're seeing less NBA type stuff. And it's a combination of the state of the league today and then also the way NBA 2K is promoted.
It is. And you go back through the Twitter feed of the official 2K Twitter account, you may see the occasional promotion of a roster update. So you'll see, oh, such and such is now 87 overall or 91 overall, agree, disagree. So that's pretty much as deep as it gets. Or they'll tie it into something with the current NBA, like if somebody has a big game or a playoff sim or something like that, which they recently did. Incidentally, they are predicting the Brooklyn Nets to win it all over the Lakers. They will do some focus on the NBA peripherally, I suppose. But you're right, it is about, are you copying these clothes in the neighborhood or the city? Are you? And they do have a separate My Team Twitter, which they often retweet from the main account. But it's often about, okay, these are the new packs that are coming out, and this is the out-of-position packs, and this is the glitched packs, where you've got Shaq with the Hall of Fame Limitless Range and everything else that is, as we've talked about before, the problems with My Team. So there's all that focus on, you know, it used to be about being a sim game, and it really has moved away from that, or it seems to be appealing to a crowd that's not really as interested in that, and by extension not as interested in the real NBA. And it is great that they still have such a deep franchise mode in there, and of course they do have the historical teams, for better or worse. We've talked before about the problems with the ratings and so forth, but I mean, they've still got a lot of NBA content, but you look at even the attitude in the community. Like, you go onto Reddit and you'll see people saying, well, who plays my career, as far as the NBA side of things? Now, people also say, who plays my team, which is a ridiculous statement. But there is a real, much like the railing against the broadcast camera, which again, I suppose, is kind of connected because that is something that is to do with the NBA and reality. People are saying, who is playing my league, or who is playing the NBA side of my career, when that's a big part of the game, simulating the NBA and pretending to be either a player in the NBA or a GM or controlling the whole team. Traditionally, that's what NBA 2K and NBA Live and other such games have been about.
Yeah, so a couple things. You know, when we talk about My Team, you know, what it used to be was people trying to emulate players in real life, right? Like, you saw Derrick Rose's dunk on Dragic. You'd want to copy that, right? You saw Dwayne Wade's spin dunk and throw down on the against the Bulls. You wanted to emulate that in real life. You had the real life stuff that, you know, the real life players that you got super excited about and tried to emulate. But then when you look at the My Team promotion, it's all about these OP packs and players doing things that they could never do in real life, you know, when you get those players, and it's turned into fantasy grounds, right? So it's not the same thing. It's not promoting what you know, see in real life. It's not getting realistic cards or anything like that, or getting you excited to copy real life stuff. The other aspect is when you look at the NBA now and you look at some of the top players, their games aren't as exciting as what we've had in the past. They're not as there's a lot of drama, unnecessary drama, and it has nothing to do with what they're doing on, like, good on the basketball court. It's what is Harden most known for? Flopping, right? Are you excited to try to play a video game? Are you trying to flop with Harden? You know, I talked about this a little bit earlier. His game is, for a lot of people, for a good majority of basketball fans, a nightmare to watch. They don't enjoy watching James Harden. Kyrie Irving is often out and mired with and it has tons of drama off of the court as well. And he's also a below the rim player. So the Kyrie Irving, one of the most high promoted names, Durant was out all last season. And Durant is mostly now a below the rim player as well. And he's also very basic overall on offense. He's not like a super explosive player. Certainly not what he was before. LeBron is what he is. He's, you know, mostly an open court dunker as far as like highlights go. And as far as an offensive repertoire, as a scorer, he's very limited. It's very barrel down the lane. It's, you know, for a lot of his baskets, it's very much, you know, the threes as well, because he obviously improved his 3-point shooting over the course of his career, but nothing like super explosive and super, super exciting to try to emulate. So like, if you look, and then you got Devin Booker and CJ McCollum, who are very, they're shifty players and whatnot, but they're not going to produce these explosive moments on the virtual hardwood for you. Same with Luka Doncic and everything. So I think when you look at the personnel and the athletes and the characters and the styles and everything in the NBA now, it doesn't compete with many years past. And I think you can agree with that as well. It's just not as exciting. The other thing too I wanted to point out is NBA now, how many people do you think are watching full games in comparison? I think what a lot of people are doing now is they're just catching the highlights, which aren't spectacular, which I've just kind of gone over, but they're catching some highlights of the games and they're constantly buried in stats. So you're not getting people watching the full games, getting the full experience, getting super hyped up about the NBA. Therefore, do you really expect them to sit down and play a My NBA in full? Do you expect them to jump into Play Now and play a full game and try to emulate something they didn't watch? Do you see what I mean? So, like, there's so many different pieces to this. And unfortunately, because of the way NBA 2K has the market cornered, somebody else brought this up as well. NBA Live needs to come out with a game. EA Sports does NBA Live. They just need to do it. But we also used to have more options for games as well when people were super pumped up about it. So if they got sick of NBA 2K, they could jump into NBA Live. If they got sick of both of those, they could jump into NBA Shootout, all of that stuff. And it gave us more avenues to play NBA games and basketball video games in general and possibly produce more highlights. So that's also out the window. Yeah, I agree, like what you said, 100%. It's as far as the way they handle their content, they will sprinkle, as far as NBA 2K goes, they will sprinkle NBA stuff out there, right? They'll sprinkle like, you can get this My Team card. Here's all the My Team cards that we're promoting. But the majority of their content is related to the builds and the online modes that they want people to get into. And then the NBA stuff is incredibly, I'm not sure if this is the right word, but shallow. It's not deep. It's not highlight related. It's not really promoting the NBA or its history either.
It's not the focus. It hasn't been the focus for years because it really has gone to that online scene, has it not? And really focusing on the park, on playground, on pro-am, on trying to make the 2K league, and things around the city as it is, or the neighborhood. So it really has changed focus. So the NBA is just not, despite the fact that it's in the name there. I mean, you even have people suggesting, do we need the NBA in the game, which is absurd.
But if you actually looked at YouTube, you saw the tweet probably that I replied to. They said, it is almost impossible to find NBA content, NBA 2K, NBA related content on YouTube. Like if you search NBA 2K21 gameplay, it's all online builds. It's all online park. So if you actually looked at it that way, you'd be like, okay, so when I search this, hardly any NBA, true NBA content comes up. Do they really need it? Right? But I'm going to say this, and I've said this on many podcasts in the past, the NBA is still the draw.
Regardless of
the shape of the league, et cetera, the NBA on the name is still the draw. And if they removed NBA from NBA 2K21 and just called it like basketball 2K22 or something like that, and then NBA Live came up and they had NBA Live in the name, that would be advantage NBA Live. That would be advantage the Live series.
You know, it's something that really has changed over the past decade. When you look back at the early 2010s, now obviously early 2000s, which is 20 years ago now, scarily, you look at how the games were promoted, and you look at the user base at the time. It really was it was a different time in the NBA. It was before the 3-point revolution, quotation marks. It was before a real shift in the way the NBA was promoted. It was, frankly, it was before Adam Silver. That's something we've talked about on Holding Court a few times. The changes that we feel that he is behind, that has affected the video games as well. But the other thing about those early 2010s games, or kind of turn of the decade there, if you will, is that at the time basketball gaming was more niche. And I hate to talk about it in these terms because it sounds very elitist, it sounds gatekeeping, and I do not like elitism, I do not like gatekeeping. Hate them, in fact. But the unfortunate fact of the matter is that when you do expand the user base beyond just the hardcore basketball fans and the hardcore NBA fans, you bring in more casual fans. And casual always has that negative connotation with gaming. So again, I don't like the gatekeeping aspect of that. But you do have people that just want to get on the blacktop on the playground or pro-am and just play with their avatars, which is fine. I've partaken in that a lot over the past few years with my career and its connected modes. So I'm absolutely not saying that those modes shouldn't be in the game, or that those people are wrong, or that we shouldn't have as many people enjoying basketball in real life or on the virtual hardwood as possible. I don't believe in that gatekeeping and having... It's, something doesn't have to be niche to be good. You know, and basketball is certainly mainstream in general these days, and has been for years. But as you do expand that user base, it does go beyond the people who are really interested in having that accuracy down to the last rating, overall and individual attributes, to have that historical accuracy, to have a realistic style, to really focus on the NBA side of things, to focus on those traditional modes of franchise modes, for example, and taking control of an NBA team and making trades and signings and playing through the years. It's no longer about that. There certainly is that dedicated franchise community, which is great to see, and I'd love to be a part of that again. But it has moved beyond that. As you continue to expand that user base beyond the hardcores, you do bring in the people that have different ideas about it. They just want to play a semblance of basketball that they find fun. And I think that as they become the majority and the hardcores become the minority, the game starts catering towards that wider audience. And this has been brought up by a few people. I've written an article about it. I think it was Brian Mazik who brought it up originally. 2K at the moment is competing with Fortnite and Call of Duty. So it's trying to appeal to the wider base of gamers. And so it doesn't necessarily focus on what's about basketball, but what's about an appealing, successful recurrent revenue model and appealing to gamers in general. So the focus moves away from the NBA, and the hardcore players that were all about franchise gaming and having that historical challenge mode and accuracy in the ratings and everything and sim, now that they're the minority, the NBA modes, they're not the popular modes anymore.
Well, I think you can agree with this. It seems that more people truly used to love the NBA, and now more people like the idea of the NBA.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
That is how I would word it. I think we used to have a really good majority of the population, including my friends and whatnot, and just people I knew in real life that just absolutely loved the NBA product. they would get super excited for games on that were coming on that night. We would talk about the upcoming games. We would get excited to talk about the games afterwards. You would see the comments on any media channels from people that, you know, we had at the time, you know, those platforms that we had at the time. People were pumped to talk about real on-court happenings and whatnot and real on-court matchups and et cetera. And now I feel like people like the idea of the NBA, but they don't love it the same as far as like most people are concerned. They're not in love with the on-court action, et cetera. And you know how I know that? Because they're hardly ever talking about real on-court action. You know, they're talking about stats and they're talking about this guy versus this guy, but they won't talk about what actually happened on the floor. And if they do, it's only stats related, et cetera. So I think, like I said, I think more people used to actually love the NBA and now more people are just like the idea of it.
No, so. I can see that. It has affected the discourse. I mean, the discourse has definitely changed over the course of the past 10 years. Both opinions, the way the NBA is covered, the conversation as it's driven by the talking heads, and this is again something we've talked about more in Holding Court, but it does also affect the virtual hardwood as well, because you have those same talking heads sometimes making appearances as commentators in the basketball games and driving that discussion. It does seem to be more about making a point or winning a performative argument on the internet rather than enjoying the sport, trying to quantify everything with analytics rather than, again, just enjoying. I mean, you can get to a point where somebody in a game leaps from the free throw line over two defenders and 360 windmills it into the basket and shatters the backboard. I mean, okay, that's NBA Jam stuff, but let's just say it happened. And you know there's going to be somebody out there saying, well, you know, a three-pointer is worth more. You know, so it's this pure enjoyment of the sport. And if it's not happening in real life, it's certainly the same. But I do think it's invited those people into the basketball gaming sphere as well. It's gone beyond the hardcore hoop heads to those with a more bandwagon-y approach to basketball. I mean, we're seeing a lot of people being more fans of players than teams, or they're following the player around and not really sticking with a team. So fandom has changed, and so attitudes to basketball gaming change as well.
It feels very WWE, and I know you're a wrestling fan, but I think you know what I mean. It feels very, like, clinging on to a name, but not just clinging on to a name, but clinging on to a name without substance and then jumping. Like, I it's really hard to explain. I just absolutely can't stand the state of the NBA today. Not new news to any listeners. In the state of basketball today, because, you know, it also starts at the youth level and how kids are coming up and the dominance of AAU, which is the plucking grounds basically for, you know, the G League and the NBA and college basketball and whatnot. So this is definitely something we could talk about on Holding Court again. I guess the last thing that I will say about this is I'm disappointed. And it's hard for me to pin that blame on the gamer because it's the way the NBA is, the way the NBA is marketed now, and also the way that the video game companies are marketing the games and what they're pushing as well. But I'm disappointed in the lack of highlights, the lack of real basketball gaming talk, the lack of real basketball highlights being submitted, et cetera. And I just wish it was different.
That's I think some people are also burned out on basketball gaming. As popular as it is, as much as the game sells, we've talked before about how there's not as much passion around it, or not as much genuine enjoyment of 2K, that a lot of people do buy the game out of an interest in having a new basketball game, but not out of a genuine love or excitement for 2K, or there's more cynicism than before. So that would also drive the conversation as well. And as far as not participating in NBA modes, well, my career is an NBA mode, or has an NBA side of it. I think a lot of people like the connection to a My Player, to be able to put themselves in the game and play in the NBA that way, and then take to the streets, take the pro-am, things like that. So that's the next evolution of the concept. People do like that online team play modes, and I get that because I've participated in them as well heavily over the past 5-6 years, I would say. more so than franchise gaming. And every time I try to get into franchise gaming, I find myself pulled back. And it is a big time sink, is the problem. And as for my team, you know, you have these fantasy modes, and people say, yes, it's fantasy, but I do think it needs to be more grounded in reality, because, as I said before, Derek, if you can get a Shaquille O'Neal that can do everything, including shooting threes and break ankles with crossovers, why bother getting a Steph Curry? That's my problem with it. It's not that, oh, it's unrealistic, because obviously you have players in my team that have sadly passed away, or you know, or that you're playing past and present together. So there is an element of fantasy. There always will be. There's no problem with that. But again, why get a Steph Curry or a Dale Ellis? Reggie Miller's not in the game. Why get a great three-point shooter, past or present, an actual player, when a Shaq can do it as well? So to me, it just waters down the mode as much as anything else. But it does appeal to a lot of people that just want to collect cool cards. And without really worrying about the history of the game or the accuracy of the game, they just want a card that can do what they need to do to win. So it's become about, we said this before, simulation versus competition.
It has, and I think it actually makes people not want to play those modes as much at times. It's because it's lost its draw. It's, remember, I told you why I loved NBA 2K15.
Yes,
my team,
yes.
It, because you know you would seek out those players that would truly had those special skill sets and that would really help your team, and you knew that the player that you were seeking out was going to, at least for the most part, have the special abilities that he had in real life. And I think that when you have the My Team mode, that the way they run it now, and like you use the example of Shaq, I think what happens is you lose that special aspect of the mode, the realism aspect of the mode, the sim aspect of the mode, and it ends up being just a free-for-all. And I don't think that makes it fun. I don't think it makes it fair. And I think it just makes it absolutely silly. And I don't think that type of gameplay and the way that mode works belongs in NBA 2K, in a game that's marketed as sim.
And look, obviously people can listen to this and say, oh, old heads complaining about the way gaming used to be, about the way NBA used to be. But there is a pushback against not just nostalgia, but anything that's old. The idea that everything new is better than it was before, and that the old days, that it is nothing but nostalgia. And to that end, I do wonder if people look at franchise modes and say, oh, that's old. You know, that's not new. That's not innovative. That's not for us. That's something for old heads. And this is for new people. This is for the elite. This is for the elite basketball gamer, online team play. Because you do see that attitude, the people poo-pooing offline play to hold up online play as the standard, as the way to play, and the way to play for elite gamers. So anything that doesn't prove your mettle on the virtual hardwood is looked down upon.
Yeah, and you know, I think the way the NBA regular seasons have been kind of crapped on has also not helped this. And when I say the NBA regular seasons, I mean like the regular season format. There's been constant push over the last few years for the whole like shortening seasons. And you hear that even on NBA 2K commentary. They put it in there where Bill Simmons comes on and he says, when he's part of the booth, he says that he thinks that it should be a 70-game season because 82-game seasons are too long and the players deserve more rest. And then you have other people coming onto the broadcast saying that the seasons are too long, and that you see it in the media and on articles where players are constantly injured and on minutes restrictions, and players need more rest. And, you know, 48 minutes, it's a long game, and players shouldn't be playing more than 30 or 32 minutes at a time. And you know I'm not exaggerating this. We see this stuff.
We hear it.
And
yeah.
We see it
yeah.
a lot of the time here. And so I think that the regular season, and this affects the way my NBA and before that my league is played, and the interest in it, I think the regular season has been almost talked about as it's useless, right? As that it's just that there's not a draw to the regular season like it used to be. Like there used to be. So I absolutely think that also impacts people playing those modes.
No, that's a great point as well. But if people aren't enjoying, not just us that are looking at it from a jaded old head perspective, I don't look at it that way, but that's how people will put it. It's not just us. It is people, younger people, who feel that the regular season is, and probably some older people too, who have adopted that point of view, looking at the regular season and at the length, the whole overall experience that used to really excite us for 9 months a year. People are looking at that as being, oh, this is too much. We can't pay attention to this. This is boring. So yeah, if people aren't enjoying the NBA, young or old, in the same way as they used to, no, that would definitely affect the ability to want to jump into a franchise game or a season mode and play all 82 games, 12-minute quarters, as I used to love to do. And look, these days I might simulate more because not as much time, you know, other responsibilities. But those options have always been there to simulate. So it's not like it's a new thing. So it's, and that's there to take advantage of if people don't want to play every single game. And of course you can play shorter quarters and normalize the stats to 48 minutes. If you wish,
I want to point out too, you know, the people that anybody that says, well, they're being old heads and getting in touch with the times, blah blah blah. You know, we're backing up everything with reasoning. Okay, we're giving you the reason, and so you guys can say that all you want, but we're giving you full reasoning on why we feel this way and why we think it's, you know, the basketball gaming space is often not in good shape and why these modes are not being played. So I absolutely can't stand that attitude. And the other thing too is one of my biggest pet peeves is people that say evolve with the game, or, you know, they'll say things like, well, you know what, you better get used to it because this is the way it is. Absolutely not, because you don't just accept something because it's new, because it's trending, or because, quote unquote, it's the evolution of the game. If something is off, as we all know there is, with the current NBA product and the way that it's received, then that's something that we should be speaking up on. So there is no getting in touch with the times. You can be very knowledgeable about what's going on in the NBA today and in the basketball gaming space and the basketball landscape in general. And if there's an issue with it and you can identify and explain that issue, then I think you should be speaking up. So, you know, the other thing too, and you know this, and this is one of the most common, is, well, if you don't like it, don't play it. Or if you don't like it, don't watch it. Again, that's a good way for people, not a good way, it's a terrible way to try to silence actual feedback and silence actual criticism. So
it's not good, but it's effective.
Constructive critiques, right? Exactly. So there is none of that. That is just absolutely childish behavior. It's kind of, with the lack of better term, silo thinking. It's very much uncalled for and kind of mindless. It's a mindless way to talk and a mindless way to think. So I did want to bring that up. That absolutely drives me nuts.
It does, and we've seen the discussions, for lack of a better word, to be kind about it, on Twitter, and it does run along those lines. And I mentioned the broadcast camera because, of course, I did that article a couple of weeks ago. We talked about it on the show as well. But I think it really does highlight that difference, because for a long time, we were asking for, in games, can we have authentic broadcast camera views and presentation? And for a while there, the default camera angles were, especially in NBA Live at least, were those mid-court camera angles, kind of like a 2K cam style that EA had as well. I think it was even just EA cam or baseline, or it's come by a few different names over the years. But that was the default angle for a few years in the early to mid-2000s. And people were saying, hey, can we have the default view broadcast? At the time, that's what people wanted. So it has been that shift. So now that it's all about being, you know, a gameplay angle, a 2K cam or micro default drive, etc., all those different ones that, and admittedly, I play on micro default for the micro modes and the connected modes, but for everything else, I play broadcast. So now that it's gone towards the let's play as an avatar, let's play these connected modes, let's play online team play from the best camera angle, what people feel is the best camera angle for them in those modes, the broadcast cam has been relegated as, again, an old head thing. Like franchise, which is funny because there are definitely young people, I've seen it being talked about, and younger gamers saying, you know, we do play the franchise modes. We do see the problems with my team, and, you know, and making some of the same criticisms that we do, criticisms of the neighborhood or the city. I've seen it on Reddit, people saying, look, I'm young, but I don't like this either. But, I mean, enough people must do, or I mean, if you want to play those modes, you have no choice. You have to put up with it. It's kind of like saying that everybody loves the main menu, right? But you have no option to skip the main menu, so of course it's going to be popular. So it's kind of like that. But I don't think it is just us. I mean, it's easy to write us off because we are older in the demographic, but it's definitely not just us. But there has been that shift. As the gaming habits have changed, so has the attitude towards things like broadcast camera and franchise mode and the NBA side of my career. Everything that's kind of traditional, old school, that's been there for a while, there is that railing against it because, remember, old is bad, allegedly.
Well, people used to want to emulate the NBA and the moves that they see in the NBA when they were playing, whether using the player or not, the specific player or not. But now what they want to do is create a player, and this is the way it's been marketed heavily to them, and because there's less of a draw to the NBA product and those players in general, that what they want to do is they want to create a player themselves often, or just a fantasy player, and do ridiculous street ball type moves that they can't do in real life from an angle that they've been told makes you feel like you're really playing. Like, I don't know how else
Sure.
to
Yeah,
put it.
no,
And
that makes sense.
there's nothing wrong with that, but it's really dominated the basketball gaming scene. It's gone from, and I want to point something out too. The game's gameplay mechanics absolutely cater to it. That wild, we talked about it when we were watching the NBA 2K League highlights. Remember that I sent you? We talked about it, the wild, fast, ridiculous dribbling, the unstoppable drives for wide open dunks, not even dunking on anybody, just like wide open dunks after doing the wild, crazy dribbling, the silly, wild dribbling into like ridiculous quick flick fades from like 35 feet. That go in, which you showed me on highlights from NBA 2K21. I think somebody hit like 20 something threes in that game, and he took one from like a couple feet inside half court. You sent me those a while back. Like, that's what basketball gaming has turned into in a big way. And so it's gone away from the real sport, to be honest with you, in real sport and real abilities of human beings playing the sport, and it's gotten in to that. And somehow that's invaded the sim basketball gaming market. So, yeah, it's frustrating. It's really frustrating.
It is, and we mentioned the discourse, and a lot of it, whether it's about real NBA or basketball gaming, it's about dunking on someone else's opinion, proving them wrong, getting the gotcha. It's about proving superiority rather than enjoying the moment or replicating reality. You look at the basketball discourse again. It's about saying, okay, this player is the greatest of all time, and these are the stats that back it up. Or, there's no enjoyment of the highlights, enjoyment of a full game. You don't see people really reminiscing about moments on the court, real or virtual, more so than stats or who's got an OP build, who's the GOAT. Whatever it is, the discourse is really around about having that winning a performative argument rather than actually enjoying playing or watching. So there's a lot of toxicity, I think, in the discourse, and that affects both, obviously, the fandom of the real NBA, but certainly basketball gaming as well. And the toxicity is something that, 2K has done some things that I think does really cater to elitism and toxicity, but at the same time, it's also on us as gamers as well, and society at large. It's very hard to change the culture just by speaking out against it. Although that being said, I'm not against speaking out against that toxicity, but I do realize to some extent that we are yelling into the wind.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. It really is. It's unfortunate because not enough people are having these conversations, and that's how things get worse. That's how things can continue to be taken advantage of. And I wanted to make a point too. The NBA feels as artificial as it has ever felt, as far as like the competition, the way it's refed, the ridiculous drama surrounding it, constant resting, like it just doesn't feel like the integrity of game is real, has really gone downhill, the integrity of the game. So it's not surprising to me that NBA 2K21 and some of the recent 2Ks has just been filled with artificial boosts like the game feels artificial. The way the players play, the way the mechanics work are often artificial. The way you have to play to dominate in those modes is feels very artificial. It's dominated by artificial boost via badges, etc. So like, you know, you talked about Shaq in my team and, you know, OP Kareems and stuff like that, where they do things that are completely artificial that they never did in real life. And they do things that human beings can't do in real life at the rate that they're doing. So, you know, as it's not really surprising where the NBA feels the most artificial that it's ever felt, in my opinion, so does NBA 2K.
No, that is the sad reality of the situation, unfortunately. I don't see the trend really changing. I don't think people will be going back to those NBA modes, but it's a shame because that's where some of the best highlights are, which is not to say that we don't welcome highlights from other modes. I mean, I submitted a couple for the latest top 10 from 2K Pro-Am. And before we get too off topic of that, I do want to mention, as far as our top 10 goes, we are accepting plays from old games, and even if they're in the archives, they don't have to have come from the past week to be featured.
Right, they're plays, right, they're plays of the week, not plays that happened this week.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So we do want to throw that out there, because if people are feeling they don't have anything new to share, if we haven't seen it yet and it's cool, that counts.
Yeah, please, you know, I don't care if you had a YouTube, you know, you dusted off an old YouTube channel and it's a highlight that you posted back in 2016. Like, I don't care, send it to me. Tell me where it is. I can grab it from YouTube and then cut that highlight out. I have the ability to do it. You've seen my setup. It works really fast and well. Yeah, you know, we want your submissions, and we want to see the passion. Prove us wrong. Prove us on this podcast wrong and show us that you're still passionate about the NBA. That's basically what I'd like.
And I also need to step up to the plate, which is a baseball metaphor, but I'll use it anyway, and play some more franchise games. I've been playing more My Team this year. I do have a lot of NBA My Career-oriented highlights that I'll probably be sending away as well. But, yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm not playing the franchise modes as much is because I haven't really been as enthusiastic about the NBA, at least with the My Career modes. I've got my own avatar myself in the game, which I can kind of be connected to. So I definitely do get it. If people like us are feeling disconnected from the NBA, but finding a way to enjoy the games in other ways through My Team or through My Career, I totally get it. And once again, there is nothing wrong with playing Playground or Pro-Am or My Career or My Team, anything else, any mode in the game. If it brings you joy on the virtual hardwood, that's what it's all about. But it is interesting that we have really moved away from the NBA modes, and I can attest to it myself. But at the same time, I would love to get more involved with those modes again.
Yeah, and, you know, the way I get my fix is it's not playing with the now NBA as much. But what we do is, you've seen it, we've posted a couple of videos of fantasy drafts with the using the now NBA and just the current NBA rosters, and we tried to have fun with that. But the majority of our content is using legends, putting legends on the same team, doing a fantasy draft that includes classic players, all of that stuff. And we'll use new games, we'll use older games, etc. And I understand that not everybody has a big video game collection. I understand that people do move on to the newer titles, and maybe they get sick of the older titles, or they don't stack up to them.
People aren't
for
us.
Various reasons, mode-wise. Right, right, exactly. But basically, I understand that you guys are not nuts like Andrew and I.
Yeah.
You know, the majority of you. Like, I get it. But at the same time, if you are playing those modes, share the excitement with people, right? If you are playing the newer games and you do have something that happens, you know, maybe share the excitement with people. Get pumped up about it. This is, and I said this in the tweet, it's the height of access. It's the height of media. It's the height of social media. It's the height of technology. We have more ways now than we ever had before, 10 times more ways than we ever had before to share highlights, to share our experiences, to do all of that stuff. Yet we have less people doing it, from what I can see, than 5+ years ago. And that's wild to me.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's
look
disheartening.
Back,
yeah,
it's disheartening. I look back at some of the, you know, the highlight video threads, like I'll use a 2K14 example on the NLSC, and it's just pages and pages and pages of highlights, right? In screenshots and everything. And now we can barely get a couple pages for the newer games.
Yeah.
So
it's people showing up pods, which is fine. And look, modding is a big part of what we do, and we never want to discourage that in the whether it's in the media threads or discussions, and of course mod releases.
And we both mod.
Absolutely. And we both mod. So it's not something we want to discourage, but at the same time, it feels like some people would rather mod a broken game than enjoy a good one or really enjoy the actual gameplay. It's kind of odd and kind of disheartening, but look, we're pushing it. We want to bring it back. We want to bring back that discourse. We want to bring in that in-depth conversation about basketball games. We want to celebrate the positive as well as criticize the negative aspects of the game, and we want to share those moments. And I think the top 10 is a great way of doing that. Obviously, time has moved on. I mean, anybody can create a YouTube channel, but look, if we can all promote each other and spotlight these great plays and all in one place and really kind of promote that for the community, then so much the better. So, I'm really glad you've taken on that initiative because I'm very lazy when it comes to video content. Well, I like to do a few other things around the site too, so maybe lazy is a bit too self-deprecating, but nevertheless, I'm glad you took it on because it was such a great feature back in the day. I know it can be a lot of fun again, so everybody please get involved.
Right, and I'm enjoying putting them together.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just like I came up with the idea to bring it back. And, you know, the reason why is not just because I want to highlight your great work, but I also love seeing your great work. And I love, like, putting it together and packaging it up and getting people to see how much fun we can have on the virtual hardwood. So, like, you know, there's a highlight in the most recent top 10 of NBA 2K12 for PS2 where Tracy McGrady takes off from, I don't know, 17 feet away from the basket for a two-handed dunk. And that's just awesome. I don't care that it's from an older game. That game's almost a decade old. It's just an awesome dunk. And, you know, I just love looking at this stuff, and I love looking at your highlights.
So keep them coming. And
get involved.
Yeah, and let's bring the NBA back to NBA video games, perhaps.
Yeah, please do. And we need competition in the space, so I still have my fingers crossed that EA Sports NBA Live is coming back.
No question. But speaking of bringing NBA Live back, we have been doing that kind of recently with our adventures with Parsec, which we've talked about the past couple of shows. But one of the reasons we haven't talked about it this week is, yeah, we've had a bit of disappointment there. They've updated the program, and it's been very hard for us to get a game because of new connection issues. Because you're sending me a great picture now with the updates, but unfortunately, it hasn't worked out with the connection speed between us. I mean, two different countries on the other side of the world, two different continents. It's been hard to play. It was very playable for a couple of weeks, and we're kind of missing our fix this past week.
I'm a little sad because I didn't change any settings on my end, and I'm also sad that Parsec hasn't gotten back to me about my inquiry. I do know that we're now heading into a weekend, so maybe they'll get back to me next week, but I did shout out the issue on Twitter, tagged them, sent them all the screens, all of that stuff. So Parsec went, and by the way, just right after the podcast that I promoted the hell out of him.
Yeah.
Too. Like, I was promoting Parsec because this is unbelievably godly application. And then now, yeah. So they put through an update that only allows, and I think it's related to this, it's like a maximum quality setting. And it only gives me two options. It only gives me high and max. So for you, it's better for you to have a slightly blurry image, but amazing gameplay.
Exactly.
However, with this new setting, what it seems to do is it gives you either a high or max quality image in HD at the sacrifice of your FPS. So now you have all of this lag. We tried to connect a couple times and play. It was unplayable. So we were hoping to talk about some of our weekly gaming sessions, but we can't because we couldn't play. So hopefully Parsec gets that fixed.
And it's a shame because I'm still on an NBA Live 10 kick.
So am I.
Yeah.
I wanted to – you saw we tried to connect and was all excited to try to get Iverson on the court, but he was on the free agent list. So I, you know, chose Russell Westbrook and young Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant and Kerstich, et cetera. And I'm just like, this is fun. Like, getting Westbrook on the court here with Durant is fun, and the gameplay supports what I have in my head. You know, like what I can do with them on the court and the type of stuff that I can pull off. And then we had to quit the game.
Mm.
And that was just kind of sad. So.
It was. And I hope we can fix it up because it has been so great playing over Parsec. And we, like you said, we've been singing its praises for a few weeks now, only to run into this issue. And it does seem to be that new broadcast in high or max detail, which, I mean, you've got a great connection these days. Your connection hasn't changed. I've got a, well, it's not the fastest that's available in Australia, but even if I did it, it wouldn't be that much faster. It seems to be a connection issue. There's no, we tried some hardware tweaks. It's not coming up with the hardware icon on my end. It's saying that it is a connection issue, that it's not getting that stream as fast enough because of the quality. So if we can sort it out, so much the better. Because again, I miss playing. We had some great, such great games. As we said before, the fact that they were so sporting between us, two friends playing instead of just randoms on the internet is always so much better. We want to try some co-op as well as competitive play. We have these ideas for NBA Live 10, and we want to try and get other games working. But man, if we can get those optimal settings plus the connection issue worked out, yeah, there's lots of stuff we want to do. Not just NBA Live 10,
Well,
although that is our kick at the moment.
the opportunities are endless, really, as long as the connection works right. And we, as content creators and as the NLSC, and we want to bring you guys great basketball gaming, it just gives us so many different avenues to share. You know, great content, great games, different games from the past. Like we tried to throw on NBA Live 98, and we played that for a little bit before Parsec started having its issues. So yeah, we'll keep you posted, and if we do get it back up and running and everything's good, you'll see some YouTube videos pop up on the NLSC channel.
So look, fingers crossed there. Hopefully we'll get it working. We'll bring you as much content as possible because it has been a lot of fun. And again, even if we weren't creating the content, it's fun to just play each other with this stuff. And the novelty, obviously, and being on this retro kick with Live 10 and really appreciating that game. But it is a shame, but we'll do our best to get it all working again. And yeah, hopefully Parsec gets back to you.
Yeah, and NBA 2K11 was the top highlight, and that was a game that I was really hoping Andrew and I could jump into, because he was on that NBA 2K11 kick. He started his roster mod and all of that stuff. So bringing those games back and showing you guys highlights of them, I think would be awesome. But like you said, there's something about just the experience of playing, even if we weren't even sharing any of the content. So, you know, just the two friends getting together, no drama, no, like, no ridiculous, unwarranted drama, just good, clean, fun competition.
Exactly.
And it's super underrated. And it's how we used to play games before social media as well, when we were playing local, etc. And it's just super underrated.
So we'd say get onto it, but you may have to tweak some settings or wait for those updates yourself, but we shall see. But before we get onto the mailbag this week, just want to bring up a face texture that I tweeted out. I mentioned this a few weeks ago that there was a face texture from NBA Live 2004 that is kind of misleading as to who it is. After we finished recording, I sent it to you. I forgot to bring it up in the next show, so I tweeted this out over the last couple of days. It's Nick Van Exel face from Live 2004, and I sent that to you, and you showed that to your brother as well, and you well, you weren't the only ones who didn't immediately recognize that as Nick Van Exel, and understandably so.
Yeah, so we had, obviously, we both guessed Stephon Marbury immediately. And when you posted the screen on social media and asked people to guess, the first guess was Stephon Marbury. Like, it looks like Stephon
It
Marbury.
does.
But what's excellent and not surprising is that Razor was the first one to guess right, and he guessed Nick Van Exel. But that's not surprising coming from him, who now works for NBA 2K, but he just knows textures. So it wasn't surprising. We had somebody else recognize it based off of a scar. So I
Yes,
thought that was really cool too.
that's at Drabik underscore DeWid on Twitter. Shout out to you. Also guessed that correctly. As you said, yes, I noticed the scar above his lip. So yeah, that was very impressive. But yeah, it's Nick Van Exel, but it kind of looks like Stephon Marbury. Also guesses of Chauncey Billups, Steve Francis, Byron Scott. I can see quite a few of those. I did share those textures to highlight the difference, but yeah, it looks a lot better in game, or it's a lot more recognizable once you put it on the head shape.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like Nick Van Exel in the game because the model is good. But yeah, I agree. I couldn't guess it until I got a few more hints, because I just didn't think the texture looked anything like Nick Van Exel.
So that was kind of a fun game to play. So we might do that a bit more often, perhaps. Put out a texture from an old game and see if people can guess the player.
I'd participate. I think it's a lot of fun. And we have so many different games to choose from.
And with that, we are now at the segment that we love doing each and every week, Derek. It is time for the mailbag.
No, we had some questions actually in the pipeline. So thank you for submitting. Steak Geek Navarre has been super active listening to the podcast and asking questions and whatnot. So for those who participate, we appreciate it.
Absolutely. And we'll throw out another mailbag call right now, obviously, if you want to get involved, podcast@nb-live.com or hit us up in the forum or any of the socials at the NLSC on Twitter or Facebook primarily. But anyway, you can get in touch with us. We will accept mailbag questions. But with that being said, we do have a couple from Segi Navari this week. And the first is asking us about Frostbite and possible updates to Frostbite and NBA Live. It mentions the rumors of the NHL series going to the Frostbite engine, asking whether we think that NBA Live will follow suit. He's assuming that it will. What's our reactions and thoughts on that, considering the very mixed reception to both Madden and FIFA? The only positive that he can possibly see for NBA Live would be finally to go back to PC. So asking our reactions to the possibility of Frostbite. This is something that I remember talking about with Ben and Kenny over the years as well. I don't think I've talked about it with you yet, though. Frostbite is obviously a very highly touted engine, although it does have that mixed reception for Madden and FIFA, although that's also due to other issues with those games, of course, as I understand it. But yeah, that is being thrown out there as the possibility of EA adopting the Frostbite engine for NBA Live as well. Any thoughts on that, Derek?
So you remember how much Frostbite was hyped up a few years ago?
Oh, yeah.
People were talking about it constantly. It was this big new thing. And then they were like, well, is NBA Live 19 going to get it? And people were disappointed that NBA Live 19 didn't end up getting it, et cetera. I think that it could mean the world for the series if it's utilized properly. And I actually really enjoy the Frostbite engine use in Madden. I know that that game gets hit hard as far as people critiquing it and whatnot, and a lot of people think that the gameplay has become stale over the years. But as far as like the player movement goes, how reactive it is and whatnot, I really enjoy it. I think I said that on a past podcast as well. I think that if it can breed new life into NBA Live from a gameplay perspective, as far as like feel and movement and everything, I think it could be a game changer completely. My brother and I actually really like the Frostbite engine, everything we've read about it and what we've seen from it. And so I'll just say that. I think that it could be a big deal if they end up doing it. Obviously, we want NBA Live also on PC because so we can put out all of that content, mod it, promote it, all of that stuff. So, yeah, that's my answer, really. I would hope that they would, if it's a better engine and it can produce something that we haven't seen before from the NBA Live series as far as a quality of gameplay and overall player movement, and graphics even. I would say it's a no-brainer, and they should put the time and resources into implementing it.
A return to PC would be fantastic. I think it would win back a lot of people that are very disenfranchised with 2K.
It would be a big deal. You can say what you want about PC gaming still being niche, but it's not about the number of players on it. It's necessarily and how those sales hit the bottom line. It's the amount of exposure it gives to NBA Live
I mean,
and EA Sports. It's the content that gets put out. It's those videos, like we talk about. There's like a uploader named B Jeff, who I believe is also a member of the NLSE, who uploads modded gameplay for NBA 2K21, and oftentimes gets like 20,000, 80,000, over 100,000, 200,000. I've seen, I think, one with 600,000 to 700,000 views on modded content, right? Because of the modded thumbnail. Because of the title that says that it's a mod showcase, all of this stuff. So people need to think outside the box. They can't just say, well, what's the benefit of going to PC if they're not going to sell that many units on PC? Because it promotes NBA Live. It gets people thinking about NBA Live, and it makes them want to buy NBA Live, and talk about it and share it. So.
And look, people will double dip to get the PC version as well as the console version if they see the great mods. That remember the big boom with 2K12, where after UBR came out, the first UBI for 2K12, there was a lot of console users saying, "I got to get this on PC," especially when it went on sale for $5 later in the year. They said, "We've got to get this just so we can check out the mods." So you can double, people will double dip, and it will promote the game. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing too, is people need to think about that, is once all of that content initially is sent out and those content creators get their hands on it, the modders get their hands on it, when that game goes from the 50 or $60, whatever it was originally, and it drops to 50% off or more, they're going to get that many more people jumping on it and purchasing the game. So there's a much bigger picture than saying, oh, well, the game is not going to sell as well on PC. Like, that is incredibly simple thinking, simple thought, and you're not thinking big picture.
It's funny actually. It's slightly off topic, but obviously NBA 2K21 PC was free on Epic Games for the past week. That deal has expired now, but I actually claimed it on Epic Games. I already have it on Steam. I have no need for it, but I'm a collector, Derek. It was free. I had to get it.
Pretty amazing that they did that. And like I said, smart move by Epic Games as well in order to promote Epic Games.
Absolutely.
So people go on there, and what they see is they see the flashy GUI, if that's what you want to call it, the flashy app menu, and they see the pop-ups of the games that they promote and everything, and they go, "Oh, I didn't know this game was on Epic Games." Boom, they buy it, or they put it on their wish list or something like that. So all around, that was a great idea.
Getting back to Frostbite, you touched on it already, which is it has to be done right. I mean, that's the recurring theme with anything to do with, well, any game, obviously, but certainly with the return of NBA Live and its struggles over the past decade, that it can have all the great ideas at once, but it comes down to the execution using the technology that's available to them. Frostbite obviously has a lot of advantages that are being talked about, but if the engine isn't put to good use, if the animation quality is still not, if the mocap doesn't translate properly to the animations, if they're not utilizing Frostbite to the most of its ability, if it's still lacking in AI, and of course, I mean, that's not even going into the quality and depth of the modes itself, but the simple gameplay experience, if it's not utilizing the engine to its full capacity, to its full potential, then it's going to be a similar story to Ignite. Because remember, we saw the Ignite engine promised great things at the start of the last generation. We saw it the way with UFC, how it was the fighters were kicking each other, and the way the foot was wrapping around the torso, and the flexing of the muscles. We even saw some of the flexing of the muscles. If you zoom in on a player in NBA Live, you can see the skin moving over the bone and everything, and there's some impressive stuff in there, but it still led to a very stiff sti to a lot of stiffness in NBA Live over the past generation. So it does come down to using that technology to its full potential. Is it a better technology than the in-house Ignite? Possibly, quite probably. But again, it has to be done right. Now, there's reason to think that they might actually be going to Frostbite, because they have talked about the challenges of adopting the Frostbite engine for the sports games in the past, and they've mentioned that it does take a few years to really do properly, which is why it didn't come into Madden straight away, why Madden continued to use the EA Ignite engine. So the fact that they have taken a couple of years with NBA Live, I mean, again, we've talked before about how it would behoove them to actually keep us updated and actually promote the brand in the interim. But if they are actually doing that, if they are going to Frostbite in the background, that would explain why it's taking them a few years to do, and it would suggest that they are trying to do it properly, which is promising if we want to assume that's what's happening, of course. But it's certainly feasible given the length of time between the last release, and they have talked about the difficulties of adopting the Frostbite engine properly for other sports games. So maybe that does bode well for life. Maybe that does suggest that's what they're doing.
You mentioned the UFC games. Those are really impressive from a
Yes.
graphic standpoint. Super impressive. So if the animation sucks, like the motion capture sucks, the animation and the motion capture sucks, it doesn't matter what engine you're using. So if you don't have the right minds behind the project, doing the motion capture, putting together and mapping all of the animations and doing all of that stuff, and if you don't have the right artists and all of that stuff, working on the arenas and working on the players and everything, the game is not going to look and play great. So you can say Frostbite, 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 but if they don't put the time, effort, and resources to recruit their best people to work on the game, and they don't get the best animators, best graphics artists, all of that stuff in there, and the best people to do the motion capture, it's not going to be great.
It's a gimmick at that point. It's just a gimmick.
It's a gimmick, yeah. Exactly. Right, exactly. So I guess that's the last thing I'll say about that. I think that it could be great. It could be a game changer. It could elevate the series to new heights if it's used properly. But it all comes down to EA Sports putting in the time, effort, and resources and money into putting the right people in play to make the game and to actually make it, and for the suits to put the priorities in the right place.
Agreed. It's not just about, it's very easy to say implement Frostbite or go to Frostbite, but there's a lot of technological challenges there as far as getting the game to work. And yes, all the design aspects need to be right. The money has to be there. And of course, once they get that on-court product, they need to expand it. As we've said so many times before, need to expand the modes as well, just to put out that big, well-rounded basketball product that we want to see. And maybe one that's focused more on the NBA and not the streets.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Remember all the people that were saying to remove the NBA out of NBA Live?
Yeah.
That really struck a chord. That is such a bad idea to turn it into just a street game. You don't bail on the NBA, which is still the draw. But people didn't seem to get that. They were like, well, just make it a street game. No, you don't understand what that would do to the series. It would kill it.
Yeah. It's still brand recognition. It's still not just of NBA Live, of course, but the NBA itself. Yeah, you can't take the NBA out of NBA Live or NBA 2K. It just wouldn't sell.
Exactly. Agreed.
So the second question from Sega Geek Navari this week is wondering if either of us have played the last NBA Courtside game that was on GameCube. That's NBA Courtside 2002, and what are our thoughts on it? I haven't. I didn't have a GameCube. I haven't played it as yet. I'm sure I'll get around to it at some point in the near future. I know that you have. The only game that I've played in the series, actually, is the first one that came out on Nintendo 64. The second game, the sequel game, actually was a North American exclusive. So once again, that's another game back in the day that I couldn't play. But I know you have played the GameCube version of Courtside 2002. So yeah, I'll throw it over to you. What were your impressions of that game?
So remember on a prior podcast, this was one of the first ones that we did, actually, together as a team. I had mentioned that I revisited this game. And that my brother was here with me when I revisited it, and we actually both played it. And we were absolutely blown away by the graphics and the animation quality. The animations are so smooth in that game. The graphics are fantastic, etc. Obviously, we play on the broadcast angle, and it just looks so good. Some of the dunks look really good going to the hoop. The two biggest flaws in that game are the absolutely ridiculous, clunky button mapping that they have that makes hardly any sense and doesn't line up with really any other basketball games in the gaming space. The button mapping just feels absolutely horrible. Passing, shooting, sprinting, all of that stuff, it just feels off. So that really threw us off. And trying to go from playing like NBA 2K and NBA Live and then going to play NBA Courtside is an absolute nightmare, and you just can't adjust to it.
So that's
some of the mapping doesn't
That's make interesting sense. Because the first game, yeah. I mean, obviously that was Nintendo 64, and the N64's controllers were not made for sim basketball games, really. That's a big knock against the 64 controllers in general, that they had that very unique design. I mean, I loved the 64. It's actually, next month, it turns, it's 25 years old next month, actually, if you can believe it. Or at least the Japanese release, original Japanese release, June 23rd, 1996. So yeah, the controllers were not made for a lot of the games that came out on it, especially sports games. So I do remember that for the original Courtside, that some of the turbo buttons, some of the switch players and steel were different. They were on the C buttons as opposed to A and B. It just felt very convoluted. So it sounds they didn't really fix that up on the GameCube version either.
Yeah, unfortunately, because everything else is lining up and it's really fun. As far as to look at and like the animations and whatnot, you know, the other thing too, that was a little bit clunky, but I could try to get used to it, is like the menu system with the gears and whatnot. I felt like the navigation in the menu was more about show and less about how it felt to get from point A to point B. And a good example too of a really clunky mapping system in a video game, as far as menus, that was really frustrating, is I want to say it was NBA Live 2001. Do you remember, like, you had the you had to use the bumpers to go from menu to menu, and then you had, like, you know, from like on the same screen from like one side of the screen to the other, and then you had like a separate menu button that pulled up something that came up from the bottom of the screen.
Oh, on console, gave you more menu options. I mostly played 2001 on PC, which has a much better menu.
The console one. Yeah. The console one is just
It was bad, nightmare. Yeah. All the lines the remember their time. The console menus were pretty bad. We have seen some pretty bad menus over the years, and they do stick out in your mind like that, because it's just getting around from the main menu into getting a game, it just becomes so clunky. And you're right, a lot of them, not so much Live 2001 and its ilk, but a lot of games had that. They've got a really creative idea for the menus. 2K11 PC is another one, because I as much as I love that game, that menu was terrible. I hate having to do that.
You saw me trying to set up options and going in and out of the menu.
Yeah. Yeah.
It definitely is not like super.
It's a creative idea. It's creative, but it's very clunky to move.
It was cool though. They had like the little highlights that were showing up too in the menus.
Sure.
Nice touch. And I think that in what I'm speaking of, that was like NBA 2K10, which had the similar 2K11 menu system where like under a certain thing that said like settings or something like that, it would be like showing highlights of in-game play. Like I thought that was pretty cool, but as far as like functionality and user friendliness, it's not there. Live 2001 is one of the worst I've ever seen.
It is.
It was driving me nuts.
Some of the early 2K ones as well, I feel, were kind of clunky like that. They were trying to be creative.
Yeah, because the first couple 2Ks they had that like circle menu system where
that's the one.
You'd have to use your right stick and you'd have to like hover over a setting. Etc. It was more frustrating outside of the main menu. It was actually more frustrating when you were doing it in game, like trying to change camera views and stuff like that, and using that menu system. But I'd still take that over Live 2001. What a nightmare. Yeah. But as far as like courtside goes, it had all the basic modes and whatnot. But I'm very much of a gameplay guy. So if I jump on the court and I get super frustrated with buttons mapping and the button placement doesn't make sense and all of that stuff, that is a big problem. And one of the things too is you can't change the button mapping in courtside. Mm. So my brother and I went in and tried to change the buttons to something that made a little bit more sense, and we couldn't. So there was no option. So that's another design flaw. So the game definitely had some design flaws that set it back.
Could you still hang on the rim if you held down shoot, like in the original?
I don't remember, but I'm guessing that's possible. Hmm. I don't remember.
But you're right. Bad button mapping, contrived controls. It's what really, you can have the greatest animations in the world. You can have some really good features, pretty good gameplay and AI. But if that input is clunky and bad and not enjoyable, the game's just not enjoyable on the sticks, it just kills the whole experience. So it's very important that every aspect of the game is solved. And actually, I remember the original season mode in the first courtside was really weird. There was just one, you only had the one save, any roster updates you made were applied to the current season as well. Those little things there that I think if you look at things like NBA Live and NBA Fast Break 98/Action 98, they were doing it really well. So it's interesting that some games were being very creative, as Courtside was, with it being able to hang on the rim to get the technical and some of its play calling and whatnot. And I think their turbo system in particular was very similar to ones that we have today. But when they get the basics wrong, some of the basics wrong, it really does. It really stands out like a sore, sticks out like a sore thumb. You really do notice it. The other thing, of course, that really affected the Courtside series is because it was Left Field Productions, and they were basically a Nintendo, not subsidiary, I don't think, but they were pretty much exclusive to Nintendo at the time. It's only coming out on one console, and at the time, the PS2 is much more popular, PC, Xbox, original Xbox. So by just coming out on the GameCube, or originally the Nintendo 64, it became so much more of a niche title.
That's what happened with Inside Drive, though, too.
Yeah.
The Inside Drive, 2002, 2003, 2004, etc., because they were exclusive to Microsoft, and they were coming out on Xbox, and they did not touch the PS2. So all of those people who were on PS2 were playing, they're playing NBA Live, or they're playing NBA 2K and whatnot, and they didn't even check out Inside Drive. So that definitely limited the exposure to Inside Drive, which I actually thought was a really good series.
So, any other final thoughts on Courtside 2002? Any ideas that you would bring forward to a modern game? Like we often look back at old games and see these great ideas, but anything else that you'd bring through to the modern day?
No. And
No.
that's not insulting Portside. No, if I'm going to be completely honest, I think the button mapping was a nightmare. They were very basic as far as like season mode and like other stuff that you could do in the game. There was missing important things like being able to remap your buttons. The animations were so smooth and the graphics were good, but nothing that we haven't seen since. There was nothing really super special about the gameplay that makes, goes over the top of anything that we've seen since. So I don't think it's a forgettable title. I just wish they had done a little bit better with the design and with the gameplay aspect.
Fair enough, and it makes you think if Sony was to throw their hat back into the ring with a basketball game, whether they would have to end up going multi-platform and share it with Xbox and PC, like they're looking to do with the show.
Yeah, it's kind of neat that the show came out on Xbox Series X. I still haven't picked it up yet because we're still trying to finish our season on the PS4, so we don't want to get sidetracked. But yeah, all of that stuff, cross-platform is the thing, right? So that's the best way for people, these companies, to market their game and to get as many eyes on it as possible and many all the different avenues of advertising and marketing and whatnot. So yeah, I think that like we said, we really want NBA Live to come back to PC. So we'll
Sure.
see what happens.
I mean, obviously exclusives are a big thing and they've become a much bigger thing. I mean, Nintendo have had their big exclusives, obviously their flagship characters with Mario and Zelda and Donkey Kong games. It's the only place you can get the Donkey Kong games as well is on Nintendo. So that is a big thing, and PlayStation, Sony and Microsoft have their exclusives. But when it comes to a title or a genre that is expected to be multi-platform, like a sports sim, like an NBA series, I think it is kind of the kiss of death to be a single platform. You look at the Sony's NBA series as well. It's kind of a clunky series, especially towards the end, and there are some, but it also did some very cool things as well. But when it just comes out on one platform, I mean, obviously the show is the only baseball game out there, or the only baseball game of its type out there, so it can afford to do it. But with the NBA, people expect multi-platform. So if you are really going to compete, if you are going to be a series like an NBA 2K or like NBA Live used to be, you have to be multi-platform.
You do. Rock actually, I see him attacking people on this, and I think it's funny because he's right. There's a lot of fanboyism now about consoles, like, oh, you're an Xbox head, and there used to be that back in the day, but it's even worse now in the height of social media. Oh, well, you're an Xbox guy, FPS, PlayStation, and vice versa, and all of that stuff. With that being the case, and it being split kind of down the middle with fanboyism and stuff, you want to get both, right? You want to get your game to cater to fanboys of both series, both platforms. So, PlayStation and Xbox. So yeah, I mean, don't limit yourself basically, especially when you're making sports games.
And just to settle the console debate once and for all, Intellivision Master Race.
Oh, Jesus. See, I had a Super Nintendo. If we go back to that stuff, I had a Super Nintendo and a Sega Genesis, and we didn't really like show favoritism towards either. Like we played games on both. We played Sonic, we played Mario, Super NES, we played Donkey Kong Country, and then if there was a Sega game exclusive, we would play that, et cetera. So we didn't have any really like fanboyism,
Oh,
at least
I
not in my.
was I was definitely a Nintendo fanboy back in the 90s. I will admit to that. It was fun at the time. Looking back, it's very petty now. But and of course now you have Sonic on Nintendo as well as PC. You have a kart racing game featuring Sonic All-Stars, I believe, from memory. But it's no Garfield Racer. It's no Garfield Kart.
I mean, it's not life-changing like Garfield Kart.
No.
That's for sure.
So thank you for the question, Sega Geek Navarre. Always great to hear from you, and your nice comments about the show as well. And thank you to everybody else who's been submitting questions lately. The bag is empty, so it's time to get some more. So definitely hit us up, podcast@nb-live.com, or on our socials, which we'll be promoting shortly, the forum, the comment section of the bulletins where the podcast comes out. Again, any way you can get in touch with us, let us know.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely keep sending in those questions, and we love to hear from you, and you help us keep this show going. So keep it up.
So mailbag submissions and also top 10 submissions. That's what we want to get from everybody over the next week and the weeks beyond that.
Yeah, please send us your highlights. It helps me out a lot because because I'm going to be putting these videos together and doing one every week. The videos are going to be uploaded every Saturday, so definitely submit those highlights to us.
So that brings us to the end of episode number 377 of the NLSC podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. The show, of course, comes out each and every Sunday on the NLSC, which is emmy-live.com. You can also subscribe to us on the various podcatching apps and platforms, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, just to name a few. On the platforms that offer reviews, such as Apple Podcasts, we would certainly appreciate a positive review on those if you enjoy the show, and once again, we hope you do. But as long as you're tuning in and enjoying the show each and every week, that is the main thing. And as we wrap up, Derek, where can we find you on socials, and any other final words for our lovely listeners?
Definitely tune into Holding Court with D for Free. We'll try to get a new episode up soon. I'm most active on Twitter at D for Free 84. I also have a gaming channel now on there. I'm D for 3G. You can follow me there. I'm on the NLSC, D for Free. I'm active on my YouTube again, D for Free as well, with the D Brown No Look Dunk logo. And I'm on Instagram as well, D for 384. And just want to say thank you to all those loyal listeners who tune in every single week, and those who also interact with the show and interact with the top 10. Like I said, you guys keep us motivated, so we appreciate it.
Couldn't agree more. As for me, you can find me on Twitter at AndrewNLSC. I'm also Andrew in the NLSC forum, very creatively named, I know. The NLSC itself is on social media. On Facebook and Twitter, we are the NLSC. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. Our YouTube is youtube.com/NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week, so thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.